is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast. The bye week is upon us at last, and after the events of Monday night down in Santa Clara, it's somewhat needed and very much a necessity after another game where the Seahawks put us through the eternal ringer. This week on the Pedestrian Podcast, myself, as ever, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I am knackered. It's kind of the only way I can put it, to be honest.
I mean, we both sent tweets out to people we know over in Seattle, Jess and Mike Dugar, and just saying, can you like put a word in for it not to happen like that again? Because, I mean, after watching Pete Carroll, just basically Pete Carroll after the game, just to see what he said about Tyler Lockett, because there was some concern around just how quickly that guy disappeared off the field. We'll get to that a bit later, but yeah, quarter to six, I think, was when I turned everything off, kind of thing. It was going to be a late night anyway, and it was just made later and dramatic and heart racing, excitement, and just absolute chaos and nonsense, really, wasn't it?
Well, the first quarter was like just over an hour and 15 minutes, so I was looking at the watch thinking, you know, could be worse, you know. I could get my head down by 20 past four at this rate, and all of a sudden, that very much did not happen. But hey, it's a hell of a lot more worth it when you win than when you get Hauschka'd in the last minute and chuck it away or don't win. So this beggar shall not be a chooser when it comes to that, I have to say.
Yeah, it was a game which, I mean, there's a pretty cool GIF, whichever way you say it, about the win probability of the game, and that actually looks like a heart rate monitor, doesn't it? If you, I don't know if you've seen it, Adam.
It's very.
But yeah, it started all a bit when you said last week's pod that the Seahawks probably aren't going to win this. This is going to be one of those you can only what quarter can you win the game in? But the Niners could win it in the first, and it felt like when they went 10-0 up after the Kendrick Bourne touchdown and Jimmy Garoppolo realise how how do I put this? How much trouble Jamar Taylor was having on that field last night. It kind of felt that you were somewhat of a, I can't think of the word, but yeah, you were right, effectively. A savant, that's the word. With 10-0 as the quarter came to a close to an unbeaten team playing on their home patch, and for once the stadium was full down there in Santa Clara as well. It kind of was a recipe for absolute carnage, as you say, an early and expected night.
Yeah, I mean, their first drive for the touchdown, even to make it 10-0, I'm thinking, long night imminent. Yeah. This is not going to be the most fun. But as soon as, I think there were two drives back-to-back where we didn't score, but we didn't concede any points, and I thought, right, we're going to get the ball to start the second half. If you can go in 10 down, and you know, because if you're 10 down, that would suggest that you've stemmed the flow a bit and you're kind of working them out. And then kind of Jadeveon Clowney happened and made a lot of that redundant and made it, you know, a heck of a lot more manageable. And, you know, of many stories of this game, one of them coming out, I think, is you're seeing, you know, NFL media personalities and completely, you know, unbiased, impartial people just saying that it's as good a defensive end performance as they've ever seen. And I don't think you can disagree with that at all, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, before we got into that, in the first quarter, the 49ers had the ball three times. The Seahawks had the ball twice. The 49ers got 125 yards and 10 points. The Seahawks got 5 yards and not a single first down. But yeah, the performance from Clowney, I mean, he's been doing somewhat similar, but it was just, it was every snap. I think I messaged you during that first quarter where they replayed some of what he was doing to Joe Staley, who was a legitimate upper echelon left tackle and has been for over a decade in San Francisco. And he was just, he was making him look like one of those practice dummies they play against. He was, it looked it looked unpleasant to go through from Staley's point of view, but it was just, it was completely dominant. There's no real other word for it, and it was as it did not curtail as the game went on. If anything, it kind of, it was ramped up even more as the drama and the anticipation and whatever the it just kind of reached a crescendo. His prominence and his ability kind of shone even more as the moment got bigger, didn't it? And he's just, I think, dominant is probably the only word, but it's also somewhat underselling the impact and how good he was last night.
Yeah, I mean, look, Joey Hunt got posterized at one point, and he looked very, very silly, let's be honest. But Clowney basically did that to every one of their offensive linemen at least twice.
Yeah.
It was just, it was remarkable what he was doing. And it was one of those where I think I said at the end of the game, like, give him a game ball and wrap a contract around it when you give it to him.
Yeah, he Clowney finished with 5 quarterback hits, 1 fumble recovery, 1 forced fumble himself, and obviously the touchdown as well. And he also added 5 tackles and a sack to it. But it is, I mean, like we've said for a few weeks, while he hasn't posted, we said last week that he hasn't put stuff up in the box score and on his stat sheet, and for people on the outside looking in, it kind of looked like he's just kind of treading water, somewhat kind of similar to what Sheldon Richardson did, a similar type trade deal we brought him in. But for those watching, those Seahawks fans watching over the last month, really, he kind of made us look a lot smarter and a lot more, people who can judge what they're seeing better than what the actual box score was showing before last night, because he's been, as I say, he's been doing that in some realm of it for all season, but last night was his kind of as the game reached a crescendo, his performance and his impact on his team did as well, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Seahawks always kind of suggest and promote the idea that sacks come in bunches. I don't understand how or why that is the case, but it's something that's kind of a fairly constant thing that they say. And I think we always knew that there was going to be a time where they were going to sort it out. I didn't expect it necessarily to be in this game against, you know, on paper, a decent offensive line, against a good running game that you have to respect for the majority of the game. But yeah, like, it certainly happened last night, and it was as dominant a defensive line performance as even like a prime LOB Seahawks team could have expected. It was just magic.
Yeah, the biggest takeover performance the Seahawks defense ever put out there was Super Bowl 48. But that was all Cam Chancellor laying the wood on Demaryius Thomas, and you've got KJ Wright, you've got Malcolm Smith getting the pick six, Cam getting the pick. They got to Peyton Manning regularly and made him uncomfortable, but it was all of them. Right? It was Clemens, it was Averill, it was Bennett, it was Clinton McDonald. But last night, it was, for the most part, every snap, it ended with Jimmy Garoppolo, all the running back, being in the claws or almost in the grips of Seahawks number 90. And it was just, legitimately, I think it was every single snap. I think he played 70 of the 87 snaps or something like that. He sat out 14, 15, which is, well, a couple of those a bit strange with how the field position and everything, but never mind. It's incredible. And every passing week, the likelihood of him being paid, and one of our comments or one of our questions from the guys when we asked some questions earlier from Mark Woodcock was if we could afford Clowney who would we have to release to accommodate Kalani Sane, the way this team has worked out with Sherman and Earl Thomas leaving for in different routes and ways, this team really only is paying three or four players, probably. I mean, Wilson, Wagner, Lockett, and that's about it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a post last week saying that the Seahawks have $67.5 million in cap space going into next year as it stands. So you can absolutely pay Clowney, and you absolutely should pay him. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, like, Pete Carroll made an interesting comment last night, maybe this morning on his radio, where he said that Clowney's starting to figure out how he can benefit from the scheme and the positions and the jobs and things he's asked to do on the field as part of the game plan. He's now figuring out ways to get to the quarterback to make an impact in the game. And if it's took him 4 or 5 weeks to do that, and he still was making somewhat of an impact, if this is the fully formed Seahawk Clowney, then the next 6 weeks, and you'd hope and expect that the next 3 or 4 years could be a hell of a lot of fun on him.
100%. And as you say, the main thing that we asked for going into the year was make it fun. And I've not had more fun than I had last night watching him in that first half.
It was absolutely insane.
I mean, screaming.
I mean, you made a comment when he was down. I think you got the wind taken out of him by KJ Wright. That you said that he was lying down and the three medics and trainers. Would he dwarf all three? Was that your comment you made?
I think somewhere like there are three trainers tending to him, and he's bigger than all of them combined.
he's a ridiculously shaped and put together human, but he is a Seattle Seahawk. And last night, he had a massive impact. Also on the defense. I mean, we could go anywhere really with last night. It was just a bit. It was just. I mean, I was texting with Mike Dugar already, and he just. He still just has no idea what to make of that last night. And it's still kind of like I put on every social media. I think it's like I went and watched Midsommar. It was one of the films over the summer, which is a thriller horror kind of thing. And it was the most stressed out I've ever been watching a film. And I'm still unsure 6-7 months later if it was actually any good and if I actually enjoyed it. And that's exactly what it was like 6 a.m. this morning, trying to go to sleep and obviously waking up and talking about it and watching the highlights and stuff. It's I'm still unsure if it was enjoyable or it was just kind of like it was like Stockholm syndrome somewhat. We could have been through it so much with this team, particularly this year, Adam.
I think there were so many exciting plays that you have to look at it as enjoyable. Like, you've got fumble recoveries, sacks, great throws, great runs, Josh Gordon making two big third down catches, a third and 16 completion after being absolutely hosed by those hyena scum referees who were a disgrace all night. I mean, I was off the couch 5 or 6 times. It was just, you know, I was flopped over the footrest when KJ Wright dropped the pick. It was properly through the ringer stuff, and it was great. It was great.
Yeah, but maybe enjoyable. But it just, like, I think Danny Kelly tweeted that he's pretty sure that game was rubbish. Like, the actual level of quality to it was a bit bleh, but it kind of made for more of a spectacle, I guess, didn't it? I mean, because like the amount of fumbles there were, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo was pretty atrocious for the most part. I mean, 24 for 46, Garoppolo finished. That's not what he's looked like through the first 6-7 weeks of their season. And so he was off a bit. Russell Wilson kind of didn't really ever get going and never really got the shackles. We didn't see, I think you commented this morning, we didn't see anything deep downfield from both quarterbacks, but that's how this team has been successful this year, is getting the ball deep to Tyler Lockett, to DK Metcalf. But that kind of never really happened last night. It was always somewhat hitting the ceiling every opportunity that their defense was getting through, especially on third down. But
It was a very risk averse game plan from both teams.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely, like, a lot of the players are saying, like, it had a playoff feel, And you can kind of get that, like, I said to you during the game, like, I wonder what Wilson's longest air yards pass is. I'd be surprised if it's 20. And I'm still not sure. I think that third and 16 completion to Malik Turner is probably the longest pass he had of the day into the ball in the air. It was crazy. I mean, it's funny because often the most enjoyable games you see aren't the ones that are the highest quality. You need a bit of just all out lol mixed in to make it enjoyable. And fucking hell, there was plenty of lol in that game last night.
That is probably that's exactly what it is. But yeah, the only time Garoppolo ever attempted anything deep downfield was their final third down with Shaquille Griffin turned into Superman, because Marquise Goodwin is a track athlete, and while Shaquille Griffin is quick, he's not track athlete quick, or 100 meter track athlete quick. Which is just one of the plays of the season, really, so far. That play from Shaquille Griffin, his full stretch, it headed into the postage stamp, wasn't it, Adam? And he kind of got his fingertips and got enough on the ball to break up. Because if he misses that by an inch, it's not only game over, it's six, and Godwin, and there's conversations, no matter how undeserved they are, about Shaquille Griffin yet again, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, the Niners receivers in general couldn't catch a cold last night, so maybe we would have got away with another drop, but maybe the ball was a tiniest bit underthrown, but that's understandable with someone of Goodwin's speed. So yeah, I mean, it was just another just amazing play. And I said to you, we've gone way off script already on this pod, that maybe we should just kind of go through it in chronological order and let's write a list of all the things that happen. And you've sent me basically a fucking essay with the number of things that are on there. It's like a contents page. there's many things that have come up from last night. We probably won't even get to half of them. Little things like, Trey Flowers pass interference that wasn't DK Metcalf forgetting which way down the field was twice after catching passes. Yeah, it was just a ridiculous game. Like I can't think of, like, there was not like one lull period. The only period of like a lull in the game was when we were 21-10 up. And at that point, I'd kind of even forgotten that it was still a game, until that crazy Wilson fumble into Ifedi's hands to fumble into DeForest Buckner. That was the only time in the game where I thought, right, well, the Seahawks have won, we're going to see this out now. And then it turned into just absolute carnage for the next hour and a half.
Yeah, I mean, that Buckner fumble, whatever, come across after, that's another example of just what on earth happened last night. I mean, was it actually good? Jermaine Ifedi tried to run the football at him.
So, you're also messaging, you messaged my Dugar. I messaged him just before we started saying, we're just about to do a podcast, have you got any nuggets for me? And he said, if Eddie really thought he was going to score when he had the ball in his hands. I think he was on his own 20-yard line.
He was on his own 20, facing the wrong way.
Also, why was he on the left?
I think he just blocked his way around.
Okay.
Because I think I'm almost certain that Wilson kind of scrambled around, or in Booger terms, stood still for a little bit. You can see the moment where the fumble occurs from Russell Wilson, but watching live, it does look like he took it out of his quarterback's hands to run.
Which I'm almost upset he didn't. Because that would have just added another level of hilarity to this cluster of a game.
I mean, there's the Patriots a few, it must have been, it's always the Patriots, when is it Dan Connolly, I think I've pulled that name, I think that's accurate, when he returned the kick like 60 yards, that had to be the Patriots. About 5-6 years ago, one of their O-linemen, whoever they played, squibbed it up. And I swear his name is O lineman for the Patriots.
I don't
remember. Caught it and ran from like the 25 and ran 60 yards to his tackle about the 12. that would have been Jermaine Ifedi. If he'd have got, I mean, because he was against nine San Francisco 49ers, and I'm guessing what there's about four available Seahawks to give him a possession to the end zone, which was what, as you say, 75 yards away.
In fairness to him, like, I can kind of empathize with the fact that like his brain will have stopped functioning at that point, and he's not going to think, I've got to get down. He's just going to think, like,
holy shit, I've got the ball.
He's probably never touched the ball in his whole career. And, you know, he's gone full YOLO, and why not?
Yeah, and it went slightly skew if Fred Warner popped the ball out on DeForest Buckner, who, for, well, we're obviously going to talk a lot about the Niners, probably a bit more in detail. I think he was their best defensive player last night. He was their clown, just without the big star making plays. He annihilated Mike Iupati and Jerry Hunt. Obviously, he wasn't the one who ran over Jerry Hunt in this meme moment, but yeah, DeForest Buckner is a legitimate player, and it's going to be a bit of an issue. We have to play them twice a year for the next 4 or 5 years while they have that D-line group in particular together, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, he was great, and I thought Fred Warner was pretty exceptional as well.
Yeah, obviously the main guy of all focus is, I mean, before we get on to his actual breakdown, how he looked and how his game, how Russell Wilson was at the end of the game when Jason Myers' kick went through the posts is, yeah, I put on Twitter that it's refreshing, but it's another example where Pete Carroll always talks about every week's a championship opportunity and all that one and out every week, but there are examples. I think the Chiefs last year was the example in 2018 season. Last night was the example for this, I think, where there are games where no matter how they try and pay lip service to it, this game meant a hell of a lot more than probably the, what, 8 days before against home to the Buccaneers, didn't it?
Of course, and as we've said before on the pod, I think it was after the Rams game, like, the team plays up and down to the quality of their opponents, and it's a blessing and a curse because it gives you about 13 games a year where you just think, what on earth am I watching? But then you have 3 games a year when they up it and you think, we're the best team that there's ever been.
Like I say, it is refreshing because we, I mean, Russell Wilson is a pretty one-track mind, and he's kind of derided for me being, I mean, Katie Nolan was on 710 last week, and she said just how boring he is and how he like just has no idea how Seattle people get anything out of him. But then you see that, clutching the straws a little bit to drag him down a bit. But seeing that from Russell Wilson, who's usually hoity-toity and all that, it is refreshing. But also it shows that this team kind of had a feel that last night, and getting through last night with a win and going into the, what, 8-9 day break away from the facility, that was a big deal for every single person who wore Wolf Grey last night, wasn't it?
Look, as annoying as it is sometimes that Wilson is so dull, that that mentality is what allows him to throw a pick in the middle of overtime, which takes away probably his like MVP ceiling moment, potentially loses the team the game, and he's able to just block it out, go again twice, and make two outrageous plays after that, one of which is a 20-yard run on third and whatever that sets it up. And yeah, it's annoying, he's boring sometimes, but that his whole wiring means that he's able just to turn it around and block every play. You know, it's very boring sometimes when you hear people say, oh, you know, one play at a time, one game at a time, this and this, but it's actually the case with him. Like every team now says, oh yeah, we're a next man up team. Well, yeah, like everyone says that now, but like there are some teams that actually are, and then you get some teams that say, oh, you know, we're one play at a time, one game at a time. Wilson actually is that. That's not just paying lip service, and that's why he's so good.
Yeah, but also, I mean, the Seahawks are also most definitely that, because we Tyler Lockett went out injured with what sounds a gnarly shin bruise no, I mean, of course, Joe Tessitore and Booger made no mention to the fact that he wasn't their best receiver, top five receiver in the season, was not on the field in overtime. But then the third and 16 goes to Malik Turner, who then, just, I mean, he turned into Lamar Jackson. And I mean, that was one of the moments, like, the Jermaine Ifedi kind of thing happens so fast, you kind of think, okay, that was weird. But Malik Turner, you just like, you, I was screaming, just get the fat down. What are you doing? Stop dancing around. Just, I mean, he's got like 6-7 yards. He's spun around like 3-9 defenders. But the fact it went to Malik Turner, then we saw Luke Wilson, who hasn't been a massive part of the offense since he re-signed for the team. But he went down with what Pete Carroll's just called a legit hamstring, one that showed up with the MRI, and so he's probably going out a few weeks. But he went down, and Jacob Hollister turns into Rob Gronkowski MK2, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I said to you last night that when you watch him, he just looks like a player that's come from the Patriots. Like, yeah. All of his fundamentals are just spot on. And he's kind of just a very classic Seahawk-y tight end that gets involved. He's who's my man that went to the Raiders that I loved? We've done this before. Yeah, he's like a souped up Cooper Helfer, and I love players like that.
He's Zach Miller. He's Zach Miller. Yeah, but Hollister finished the night 10 targets, which led the team along with DK Metcalf, who also had 10 targets, 8 catches, 62 yards, and a touchdown, which, again, Hollister's only been really on the active roster for about a month. But it kind of showed the wherewithal, similar to what Metcalf did as well, and Malik Turner did, where they kind of scrambled. You can see him move forward and get off. He was blocking someone and get off the block and kind of move far enough downfield where Russell Wilson could just loop it up to him or Tyler Lockett, although Tyler Lockett was RKO'd during the play, but never mind, Jacob Hollister was there to bring it down. But yeah, he just looks a proper player, doesn't he? I mean, it's a pretty layman way to put it, but he just looks like he kind of gets it immediately. And as Pete Carroll just said just before we start recording, it's why he's been a success, particularly over the last couple of weeks, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that you're now almost at the point of where, like, you think you can count on him. But, you know, going into those overtime drives, when we're in 11 personnel, so one running back, one tight end, the receivers that Wilson had on the field to catch, you had a guy who signed last week, basically a walking meme of a third-round pick in DK Metcalf, Malik Turner, who, like, is barely even a real human being, and Jacob Hollister. And Hollister.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that team was, you know, people can talk all they want about, you know, this, they miss Kittle and they miss Sanders. Look at the four players that Wilson was throwing the ball to. It was insane.
Yeah. It was ridiculous, but we'll get into it a bit more. Paid absolutely no mention by the people paid to mention things like that. But never mind. Also on the Seahawks, Russell Wilson finished the day 24-34, 232. The touchdown to Hollister, the interception which was returned to Greenlaw. And that's another play which is kind of just in the ridiculousness of everything that happened on Monday night. Adam, 45 yards downfield, your left tackle, who has only one arm and is 36, yeah, is 45 yards down the field, pushing out a rookie linebacker who's 14 years his junior, Adam. I mean, Dwayne Brown, I think Pete Carroll said he looked like a water buffalo making the play on that thing. But with what happened after that play, it's a massive, massive play, and it just kind of shows that kind of it when you see your 36-year-old experienced Pro Bowl All Pro left tackle make a play, it kind of is something that, as cliche as it is, transcends and has a ripple effect through the younger guys following his lead, for lack of a better term, Adam.
Yeah, everyone's all in, and it's great to see. And that's often led by the number one guys in the locker room, and that's what he's done, and it's awesome.
Also on the offense, Chris Carson found the end zone yet again. Also, Dwayne Brown and Michael Patty, if anyone wants to go back and watch the game or just the highlights on YouTube, watch that left side of that line. They double team. I'm not sure who it is, but they double team someone. I think maybe Eric Armstead, and just open a cavernous hole for Chris Carson to run through. It was only a 1 or 2 yard touchdown, so they probably didn't need a lot. But yes, it is properly, but they just completely overwhelm the blocker. But again, he kind of set the tone, even though he did have a number. He was one of virtually every single Seahawk player to have a fumble. Adam, five fumbles, I think, there were on the night for the Seahawks. But Chris Carson had yet another one, which is just a blot on his 2019 season, isn't it? When he continued, he got 89 yards again. It's a pretty solid outing, and I think he lapped what the Niners did on the ground as a team, Adam.
Yeah, it massively needs clearing up. And because it's, at some point it's going to, you know, they've been able to ride these issues and still win, but at some point a team's not going to give you a chance, like the Ravens, who, you know, they took every advantage of turnovers that we coughed up for them. So that has to change. You know, Penny's was incredibly frustrating. It was, you know, 2nd and 7, running in between the tackles. It was the one play call on the night where I thought, a little bit predictable, didn't really enjoy that, and I thought you were asking for trouble. And so it happened with Penny. But yeah, I mean, as I said, like, there's nothing you can redo with the fumbles at this stage with Carson, because he's going to be your guy that is there for the rest of the season as your main running back, unless something seriously crazy starts to happen. But even then, Penny's doing it as well. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, it is an issue. But as you said, they're staying out of their own way somewhat in that by getting the wins. Also on the other side of the ball, defensively, Adam, we've talked about Griffin, we've talked about Clowney. Bobby Wagner was Bobby Wagner. KJ Wright had some interesting plays. But Jerron Reed, after his 6-game suspension, kind of looked like 2018 Jerron Reed, and that made a big play, obviously, forcing the fumble, which the phenom Clowney scoops and scores from 15 yards in about two strides, I think it was. But Jerron Reed looked like he did last year, didn't he, last night?
Yeah, he must have been delighted about that. You know, he probably will have felt some level of guilt for missing the first 6 games of the season, and to have the opportunity to step up and make a play for the team, I imagine, will have done him the world of good, because he's been quiet in his first couple of games back. So, yeah, it was fantastic for him that he was able to make such a big impact in such a huge moment.
And also making his debut for the day, maybe had the biggest impact outside of just that one play from Shaquille Griffin on the last third down. But Quandre Diggs made his debut for the Seahawks after a couple of weeks out with a hamstring injury, and obviously coming over from Detroit in a trade a couple of days before the trade deadline a few weeks ago. Adam got his hands on the ball, but also Layla Wood, which is something we've talked about being familiar with seeing. We saw flashes of it a couple of weeks, last couple of weeks, from Marquise Blair, who was somewhat of an afterthought, which we'll get into in a minute. But Quandre Diggs, if you're going to make an impact, and kind of not just on a stat sheet again, but he kind of just seemed to settle everything down in that defensive backfield, especially in the middle part, alongside someone equally as experienced as Bradley McDougal next to him, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, watching him last night made me think, wow, the last 20-odd games we've played, we've had some rotten safety play. Because he reminded me that, like, that's how safe, that's what safety play is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And it was very, very impressive, I have to say. He, you know, a couple of hits, he was whacking people in the back when they were catching. You know, it was kind of that, it was like watching our other safeties on fast forward. You know, he was playing at the speed that you expect to see from a Seahawk safety.
Yeah, he was the archetypal hit the ground running, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was like a, yeah, if you squinted with one eye and closed the other, you know, you could have been mistaken for, like, thinking, that guy looked a bit like Earl Thomas with some of these hits.
Yeah, but also, again, like we saw with Dwayne Brown, his effort and kind of not giving up on that, making the play on the interception return, him laying the word kind of moved around to all the other guys. And that, I mean, Bradley McDougal nearly pushed and punished Dante Pettis through the turf at Santa Clara on a catch, which I think the force of the hit kind of dislodged the ball and kept it from being a first down to Pettis. But it kind of, another thing which his impact kind of ripple through the rest of that defense, particularly the guys, well, most of the guys in the secondary, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine that having someone there like that gives the other guys the confidence that they can just play their scheme, do their job, and play properly. And yeah, it just looked like a whole different back end with him in there.
Yeah, it was encouraging. We talked about Marquis Blair being a forgotten man at times last night with Jamar Taylor. It was somewhat questionable because Jamar Taylor was being abused, Adam, wasn't he? And it was not good, and I was somewhat seen because I had one of his relatives like a tweet which was rather negative about his impact on the game, and I think it's his wife liked the tweet, which was a bit uncomfortable at 4:30 in the morning, Adam. But Jamar Taylor was picked on. It was kind of that was probably the biggest defensive issue to come out of the game last night, was that kind of how they're going to fit and if they should and when they should get Marquis Blair on the field in place of Jamar Taylor.
Yeah, he didn't cover himself in glory in the first half, better in the second. But I think, you know, if they want to have a nickel back going forward, they probably need something of a higher caliber than what Jamar Taylor was showing going forward for the rest of the year, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's just a few tweets which have caught my eye over the last 24 hours, which kind of sum up everything that happened last night. End of the first quarter, 49ers up 10-0. End of the third quarter, Seahawks were up 21-10. End of regulation, it was 24-24. 5 minutes 50 left in OT. Wilson's picked off on the 10-yard line. 3 minutes 10 left of OT. 49ers miss a field goal. 1 minute 55 left of OT. Seahawks go three and out. 23 seconds later, the 49ers go three and out. And with time expiring, the Seahawks make a game-winning field goal. Seahawks scout Mike, we talked about a few weeks ago over at Beast Pose, he said the Seahawks dropped at minimum two game sealing interceptions, couldn't for the life of them convert late on third and short, minus the grace of Josh Gordon, lost three fumbles, including one for a score, threw an interception in overtime, and still beat an unbeaten 8-0 division rival on the road. I mean, it was like we could talk about this for 3 hours, and I don't think it would make any more sense, would it?
Absolutely not.
No, just not. Yeah. Anyone else who we haven't mentioned you want to pay mention to after last night?
Well, I've only very briefly mentioned, but Josh Gordon made two massive third down catches, one against Richard Sherman. And, you know, if he was cut tomorrow, his signing has been massively worth it, as it led to absolutely a victory for the team.
Yeah. And also there's a few people, obviously, everywhere, as it always was going to be the case if we won against the Niners, negatively against, as it has been for the last 18 months, against Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman, Tyler Lockett, before his injury, was not seen for most of that game. The reason was he was up against Richard Sherman, who is still and will always be the king. But after all the chaos, as we said, the game did come down to the final few ticks, and this is how it sounded as Jason Myers lined up for the second time after he was being iced a 46-yard field goal.
4 seconds left. This from 43 to win it in overtime off the right hash mark. The kick is away. The kick is go! The Seahawks win. It's good.
Yeah, that was sweet relief, Adam. And as I kind of defended him last week, and we talked about Chris Carson, his fumble, and how he was kind of bought through that. DK Metcalf was dealt with the kiddie gloves. How they dealt with Jason Myers got immediate receipts came in quickly on that, and he kind of proved his mettle more than anything last night. With not just, he kicked a few kicks, but kicking two 46-yard game-winning, or potentially game-winning after being iced, and kicking it straight away, straight after, is a pretty cool sign for that mettle that Jason Myers clearly has, and he's probably one reason he was the Seahawks kicker, and it wasn't the other way around with how they're young pup faltered somewhat, even though in the biggest moment, after his big moment in the regulation, Myers kind of stepped up, didn't he?
Yeah, fair play to him. Yeah, I didn't think that he had the stones to do it on the back of last week, but he really, really did. I mean, such a heartbreaker for Tessitore that his best mate, and their kicker off the street, didn't make the big play, which he was begging for all night. You know, I really did feel sorry for Joe Tessitore, top, top class commentator at the time. Yes, and it was Jason Myers that stepped up and got the job done.
It was, yeah. But Will Travers has asked us to talk about it. I don't think you probably weren't going to let me not talk about it.
I'm going to let you go here.
Okay.
I'm just going to let you go.
Tessitore was the guy with Whittam, wasn't he?
Yeah. And Booger was in the Boogermobile.
The Boogermobile. I mean, like, ESPN is what's their tag? The worldwide leader of sports. And their production something on that. I mean, there was that graphic where they dressed up, was it Wilson as a Boy Scout?
It was from Up, the movie Up.
No idea. I've never watched that film. But yeah, that's just a minor thing. But like, they paid no mention to certain things. Like Tyler Lockett, like if they even showed him sitting on the sideline while the Seahawks were on offense, and nothing was said. Absolutely nothing was said. There was a bit where Russell Wilson's like jumping around in the pocket. He's not really moving anywhere. He's still in the pocket. If he'd have threw the ball on the ground, it'd have been intentional grounding. And Booger and Tess will break down how it's always a scramble drill. Why is it the scramble drill when Russell Wilson does it? When Garoppolo does it, it's smart. Booger said, oh, was it a bull rush? And then they showed, this is my favorite one, they showed the replay and DJ Jones, maybe, I don't know who it was, just he rushes, but no one's there to stop him. It cannot be, a bull rush is when you hit something, right?
Like, yes,
it's the worst. Like, they've been bad all season, but it was kind of heightened by having an interest. I legitimately muted the commentary for a drive until it was just weird. Like, I thought we had a first down, and then Michael Dixon comes out and punts. I was like, I can't watch this game on mute because it's confusing. But it's the worst. I mean, ESPN have all the money in the world, they surely have the biggest budget on all this. And they go in 3 years from Mike Tirico and John Gruden to Shouty Man and Booger. I mean, every kick that the 49ers kicker made was like, it was like he was pitching a movie to Tarantino about his kicker. And the fact he missed, I mean, the kick is really, it's unfortunate for that kicker. He's coming off the street. He nailed the first three. He nailed the one which sent it to overtime and then just completely flubbed it in overtime. But every kick was being built up like it was something dramatic. And then the Seahawks leading receiver is out with a gnarly sounding leg bruise. And it takes them 15 minutes to go to. The Trey Flowers PI we briefly mentioned, it's not even replayed. It's not even talked about as a potential PI. There's one which is probably not, but it's a lot more borderline. DK Metcalf was probably interfered with. No mention. No, we won't pay mention to that. We'll just talk about Shanahan and show George Kittle in the booth 47 times. It was awful. Yeah.
Oh, they also had a yapping dog referee in the booth with them.
Oh, yeah,
he was just agreeing with everything that was going on. It was like VAR on crack. It was really awful.
Also, Deebo Samuel, that's how you say his name. Deebo Samuel, South Carolina, wide receiver, San Francisco 49ers. You don't go Deebo every time he touches the ball. His name is Deebo. Not you don't shout the first syllable of his first name and then... Yeah, it was just atrocious. I mean, there is, everyone goes, oh, it's all being a homer and everything, like out with the commentators. They weren't, they were just terrible.
Yeah, I have been watching the NFL for, I guess, like 7-8 years now, and I still need to be educated with when I'm watching and what I'm watching. And so when you get Alan Chris, even Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, like, you learn something from almost every broadcast. I learned absolutely nothing. Listen to those hyenas last night. I honestly felt more stupid coming off the back of that game than I already was.
It was just but like people in the ESPN must be aware. They must be aware. Like, I try and watch the Thursday night college game on the ESPN, which is Adam Amin, Matt Hasselbeck, and Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee is doing his impression, as he always does. Everywhere he goes, Pat McAfee is doing his impression of Gorilla Monsoon as a wrestling announcer, as Paul Heyman. It's brilliant. Matt Hasselbeck is properly in tune. Adam Amin just kind of guides him along while bringing nuggets. And they throw it to the, I think it's Marlon McGrath on the sideline. They do that. You watch Buck and Aikman, they throw to Aaron Andrews or whoever else is on the sideline for NBC games. You've got Al and Chris who have got the one they've got. What's his name?
Is it Michel Tafoya?
That's the one. But they throw to, like, it actually adds to it. So you, it's all like, we had Stephen Nesbitt before the Steelers game on the podcast, and after the game he wrote a bit where he wrote an article about it. He went round, he was in the CBS, I think that game was on, he was in the production meetings, and how everything's put together for the show. And it's like the detail, the work they put in for these broadcasts is ridiculous.
Yeah.
For really, but most of the games are not being watched by that many people, but if they put that work in, it does not show, because they just yabber about absolutely nothing. And like, just get Adam Amin and get Peyton Manning in that booth next year and just forget this ever happened, because Tirico and Gruden were legitimately fun to listen to, and these two are the exact opposite. It's atrocious.
Yeah, it's got worse than it was with Witten and with Witten in the booth, and that was seen as awful. Yeah. So yeah, just terrible.
Yeah. But yeah, just like, we're on ESPN in a couple of weeks, aren't we?
Yes, I assume so.
Yeah, the Minnesota. Oh no, it's not, yeah, no. In week 13, the Vikings game is on Monday night. So I don't know. Let's see what happens. Let's see if they improve. Let's see if they get fired. Maybe that last night was the end all. But yeah, John Parry is the referee guy who was in that booth last night. Yeah, you just agree with absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Anything else? Do you want to go through the? We asked for people's comments and they sent a few. Do you want to go through them now?
Yeah, let's go through them.
Sean Wilson also sent me a group chat with Sean, and he said that he rewatched the game earlier this evening, and it was even worse listening to those commentators the second time round. So he's a braver man than us. Matt Wilcox's done that one. Neil Horsburgh says, after weeks not getting to the opposing quarterback, what were the conditions that made a difference this week? Was it the better secondary coverage, a more ET3-like safety in Diggs, or just better D-line knowledge? And what was the answer? I kind of think it was probably a combination of everything. We talked about how Pizza kind of gets what he has to do in that role now, but Jerron Reed had another game under his belt and he's got his sea legs from under him. Diggs did make an impact. But I just think it was kind of a perfect storm of all of that, wasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know enough about scheme to suggest anything like that, but I would imagine that from a mentality point of view, when someone like Clowney is causing havoc from pretty much the first drive and that gets into people's heads, that certainly helps, set the tone for the rest of the game. That may be complete nonsense, but I would imagine that it does make a difference.
Yeah, and Ziggy Ansah, I think we said a few weeks ago, he's not long for this roster. I think maybe the only saving grace might be interesting to see what they do with Luke Wilson, because that does sound like a proper hamstring injury. But he's making absolutely no impact. The only impact he made last night was getting offside, Adam. He unfortunately, for as good as Ziggy Ansah was 2-3 years ago, he looks a spent force, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's not working, is it? Which is a real shame.
No. John Patton said, if Lockett's out long term, which, as Pete has said earlier, it doesn't appear that he will or shouldn't miss any game time. He's actually spent another night down in San Francisco, but it sounds like he should be good for after the bye. Would you gamble on Dez Bryant or stick with what we have?
Dez Bryant is the player that you'd need to replace him, to be honest. You'd be looking for a smaller kind of slot burner kind of guy. I saw someone say that you'd almost hope that the Redskins release Paul Richardson, because he'd be the kind of guy that you'd want to come in and try and do that job to a degree. I think ultimately if you lose Tyler Lockett, you're in trouble regardless, so you just have to hope that it's not too long that that's the situation.
Yeah, but I think Pete said even the offense looked weird without Tyler Lockett out there. So, yeah, Dez Bryant would probably not be at the top of the list. That would mean if he was out long-term, which it sounds like he wouldn't, Antonio Brown would probably be above Dez Bryant on the list, I would think, Adam.
I think they would need to see an awful lot as to what happened with his with the outcome with the league, to be honest.
Yeah. Also, one name, if anything does happen with Lockett or any other receiver, watch Dante Pettis, because Kyle Shanahan, in his press conference this morning, sounds at the end of his patience, at the end of his tether with the former Husky. It sounds like he may not have much of a role going forward for that Niners. That could be a name to watch, because while he clearly is struggling, he is the kind of, he does kind of fit that shifty route runner kind of mold, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think he looked a bit soft last night, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, Will wants us to talk about the Monday Night Crew, which we have. Will, Ross and Brian both paid mention. Ross said, Penny two carries, one fumble. When is enough enough? And Ryan said, time to trade Penny, question mark. We can't trade Penny because the deadline is passed, but we've seen with Chris Carson and his fumbles. We saw with Jason Myers missing every kick against Tampa Bay and coming back last night. That's not how this team operates, is it? They don't just, you make one mistake and you're out and your haunch is on field. They kind of give you a chance. But as you said, he was not put in the best position to make a play. And yeah, he's not going anywhere with Sharp Penny, is he?
No, I would say I'm 85% certain to be on the roster next season, which is about as confident as you could be, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, he's not going anywhere. You wouldn't have thought, certainly not this season.
No,
they're not going to cut him, because who the hell they have to replace him?
Exactly. I mean, CJ Parosos cannot stay healthy, and he's kind of just disappeared into the night the last few weeks after popping off the screen a little bit a few weeks ago. But also, I mean, like, you have to have more patience. I mean, yeah, we made a mistake. Yeah, he fumbled the ball. Yeah, it could have been a backbreaking, could have been game changing, but as we said, they managed to get out of the way enough to win the game and move to a pretty imposing-looking record. And Rashard Penny is going to be important moving down, going down the stretch, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to play and he's going to have to feature. So, you know, Carson is already on for an almost unprecedented level of carries and touches. So Penny's going to have to play some, and so we're going to see what we've got.
Yeah, Sean asked about what the future for Hendricks. He said Hendricks, but I think he's had as long a day as you had. Michael Kendricks made a couple of plays, but again, as we said last week, that Cody Barton pick is going to have to show some, going to have to get some receipts on that, aren't we, soon? And Kendricks is probably the most likely person to make way for the Utah Ute, Adam.
Yeah, you'd think so. He was the guy that came in for KJ Wright when he went down yesterday for a couple of plays, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, obviously they're obviously massive on their special teams, so have to see what you can offer on that. But, yeah, I think I don't think the team is going to, like, massively suffer or struggle if there's no more Kendricks, you know what I mean? Like, they'll get by regardless.
Yeah, I think it would be very trying to think of a way. There would be growing pains, I think, with Barton, but, yeah, the ceiling is exponentially higher with Barton than it is with Kendricks, which is to be expected from a rookie second-round pick. Dan Cohen, I don't know if this is a question or just a statement. If you had to decide between no longer supporting our English football teams, Carville Spurs, or Cloudy getting a huge long-term deal, which team would you now... Yeah, I didn't read that before. Which team would you now decide to support, Adam?
Jadeveon Clowney FC, I think I just go all in on him and just support him forever.
Yeah, that sounds a lot more enjoyable to be the Cov fan than it is anyway.
And or Spurs, to be honest, at this rate.
Yeah. But massive thanks for all the just clicked off something. Oh, for all the questions, it is appreciated. It was, to be honest, a bit of a surprise to see how many comments and questions we're getting. Adam, there's a few years ago with the Seahawks where they were kind of breaking teams. It sounds like they may have done that with the 49ers last night. Ronald Blair tore his ACL. Matt Breida aggravated his ankle injuries day to day. DJ Jones has a groin injury, which is going to need an MRI. Joe Staley, who was often the other end of those Javon Clowney highlight packages on ESPN when they actually bothered to put your production onto the broadcast last night, fractured his finger and dislocated it. Ouch. And Emmanuel Sanders injured his ribs and his day-to-day will be game-time decision this week. One quote from Josh Gordon, 710, earlier. Gordon said, it seems like in this part of my career, I'm trending upwards in quarterbacks and after we play with Tom Brady. That's pretty much it's a pretty cool sort of ringing endorsement for Russell Wilson, isn't it?
Yeah, not half.
Yeah, the win last night means that every year with Russell Wilson, the Seahawks have won at least 8 games and 14 of the last 9 of the 19 seasons this century, the Seahawks have won at least 8 games. We moan a lot, especially me and you on this podcast over the last few years, but we are a little bit spoiled at this point, aren't we?
It's amazing, and you're never going to see anything like this again, in all likelihood. So drink it in.
Yeah, but what we're on, Coach, there's a lot of talk about Russell Wilson, particularly last night, how he's just kind of running away until Lamar Jackson does something ridiculous next Sunday wherever the Ravens are playing. But like we said early in the season, you said, if this team gets anywhere near the playoffs, then Pete Carroll needs to be talked about. But the coaching job, we've talked about how he's dealt with DK Metcalf, how he dealt with Carson, how he in a shorter window, how the Jason Myers thing last night anyway was sorted out. He is coaching his tail off this year, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he pisses people off. Sometimes justifiably, more often than not, they're just looking for something to moan about. But what he's done and doing with the general lack of top-end talent that he's got to play with is remarkable, and fair fucks to the guy, it's amazing.
Yeah, moving on, the Seahawks have no one to play, and as I started the podcast this week, the bye week comes at a good time, not just for the players on them, but for every single person who sat through that game last night and sat through most of these, 10 games so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so due a break. So the fact that we don't have to worry about another game this weekend is just absolutely glorious, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Seahawks head into the bye 8-2, and which is somewhat wild to say with how the games have stacked up, with just it's a plus 21 mm-hmm. point differential, which is just wild. And there's a lot on the other side of that this bye week. There's not just chasing down the 49ers who, as we say, seem to have had a bit of a long list of the walking wounded, but also the number one seed is up for grabs after the Saints lost to the Falcons at the weekend. But everything is in the Seahawks' court, as it didn't appear likely to be at this juncture when the season kicks off in the early August, Adam.
This is the last thing I expected. And the way it's going, they're going to navigate their rebuild with two playoff seasons, which is unbelievable. Like, you can't take that for granted. It really is incredible.
Yeah, they come out of the bye against the Philadelphia Eagles on week 12, and what was, an hour and a half ago, was going to be another late night on Sunday Night Football. The game has, in fact, been flexed out of Sunday night and is now a 6 p.m. UK time kickoff over in Philadelphia. I think we've got a few guys going over for the game in Philadelphia, so that may alter their travel plans somewhat. And then it's back up in the night for the Vikings. The Rams the week after, also on Sunday night. But it is after last night, 6 a.m. and all the rest of it. It was good news, weirdly, seeing your team not put on that prime time stage against the Eagles, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I have to say, it would have been a bit much just to have 4 in a row. And actually, my birthday is the 25th of November, so it would have been the Monday that game kicked off in, and I just couldn't be asked to be just knocked out of my whole birthday just because of watching those whores play until 6 o'clock in the morning again, running me through the ringer and adding 5 years to my life just on one night like they did last night.
The bye week has come at a perfect time. It's a relief to move out. Do I have a quick spin in the bin, Adam?
I think you've had a spin and a half in the bin on your Tessitore and Booger, but we'll give it a go.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly is an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, we forgot to do this last week, I think, or maybe we just didn't have anyone. I think that might move more likely, but we're back with people and things to stick in the bin. Adam, you messaged me just after I pressed publish on the podcast last week that you knew who you wanted to put in, so I'm going to let you put those aspects in the bin, and also if you want to put anyone in from this week's slate of collegiate or NFL or whatever level of this sport, go ahead.
Well, I was going to put you in the bin, ultimately, because you went to Seattle without me and you spent the week trolling me with all the great places you were. So I thought that was a very much a binnable offence. Yeah. I don't know if you ever have a retort to that.
Well, I mean, she's not here to defend herself, but it was kind of like the company you keep. And I was with someone who was equally trolling you, not just like all the way on this podcast, but she was doing it for about 10 days before we flew out and recorded the podcast in 710 Studios. Yeah, it was kind of just the company I was keeping while we were recording that podcast, Alan.
Yeah, she's moving towards timeshare in the bin, if we're honest.
Anyone else?
Anyone else? Yes, I did have someone, and I cannot remember who it was, so I'll let you go first, and then I'll remember it.
I'm going to put the NCAA in the bin. Chase Young is the vaunted and should be. He is the best player in the 2020 draft class, no matter how good Joe Burrow looks every week. He plays for LSU, but Chase Young is the best player in college football. He's the best player in that sport, in like the jurisdiction of college football. And he took a loan last year when the Ohio State played in the Rose Bowl in California, so his girlfriend's watching play in the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl is one of, if not the biggest college game, playoff game, whatever, college game on the calendar every year, annual thing. It's a big deal for all these players. So he paid it back, within 2 or 3 months, and the NCAA has suspended him, or are going to be suspending him for 4 games, which is good for any team who wants to draft him next April, because he's going to sit out 4 games. I'll be amazed if he plays in any bowl game, because I don't think Ohio State are going to make any. Well, they might make the playoffs, but yeah. Yeah, so it's good for his long-term future. It just looks absolutely ridiculous when Urban Meyer was not suspended for covering up things allegedly he covered up last year, and Chase Young is covered up for taking a bank loan from a family friend, Adam.
Yeah, just an absurd situation, and hopefully with the NCAA allowing players in the future to profit off their likeness, I guess is the term, which hopefully does happen.
Image rights, Adam.
Image rights, indeed. Yeah, my favourite. that would be a good step for the game, you would think.
Yeah. Have you figured it out yet?
I have. I mentioned it last night when I was just ranting on social media about the state of refereeing. There are two sports that I follow in great detail, and both are worth billions, and both have fans that pay hundreds on a regular basis, sometimes weekly basis, to go and watch these play. And they are being completely ruined by stubbornness and ineptitude of referees who are taking control of these games and just flipping them on their heads, just on an ego trip. And the main one that honestly nearly had me breaking the TV screen was Gerald McCoy on Aaron Rodgers on Sunday night. I mean, that is just a disgrace of a call. And you know, you've got all of these people saying, oh, you can't review everything. To be honest, we're almost at a stage where, do you even need a referee on the field anymore? Like, just have a guy watching everything and saying, that's that, and that's that. And you could probably do it as quickly as when you get these hyenas getting together in a huddle saying, this is this and this is that. You know, the Cal game against WSU on Friday, I think there was a penalty was given against Washington State instead of against Cal, and it caused a 77-yard gap and a touchdown to Cal instead of what would have been to Washington. It's just insane.
Theo Lawson, who covers the team, said it's always weird in Berkeley, and that just continues to add to that legend with those two teams playing in that stadium. But yeah, the officiating last night was a joke. That Gerald McCoy, I think Troy Aikman is often says a lot of words which mean absolutely nothing, but he said the hit from Gerald McCoy is going to be shown next year moving into the season on how to hit a quarterback and do the thing where they have to like change physics and change science and not land on them, because he hits Rodgers and then kind of manages somehow to move his body away so he doesn't fully land on him. He lands on him from what? His bicep lands on Rodgers, I think.
If that.
Yeah, and it was just horrendous. But it's and that was, a 10-point swing probably? Because that's probably going to be... it was going to be a punt from outside their own end zone and Carolina are going to get the ball 40 yards for Kyle Allen to get his way downfield, but instead they go 98 yards and score a touchdown and win the game eventually.
I think they may have actually got to stop the Panthers on the goal line on fourth down, but still,
still 98 yards.
It's a 50-yard difference in where the Panthers picked the ball up. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's bad, but yeah, last night was pretty bad. I think the worst one last night was I can't remember who it was. Was it Diggs?
It was Nico Thorpe.
Yeah. The Nico Thorpe hit. Well, not hit. He tackled the guy. he was flagged 15 yards for tackling someone, but obviously that was paid very little mention by the broadcast team on ESPN. Good week, bad week. Adam, I'll go first. Bad week for, this can work both ways. It's a bad week for Jared Goff and the Los Angeles Rams because I do not see any way of them making the playoffs at this point. With what happened with Minnesota winning in Dallas and staying on the tail of Green Bay in the north, and obviously us winning last night against the Niners and staying on their tail, and two losses. I think Vikings have two losses, maybe three. So I think the six NFC teams are pretty set.
After last night, yes, you would have thought.
Yeah.
There's the Vikings. The Vikings, Eagles, and Seahawks, I would say, unless the Niners really chuck it, are probably going to be the ones competing for their 5, 6, and 7. So fact that we get to play the two of them should work in a benefit. And if you split those two, you should really be okay.
Yeah, so it was a bad week for the Rams in that way, but it was also a good week for everyone who spent, me and you included, spent the last 4 years projecting how not very good Jared Goff is and how hilarious giving that man $135 million over 4 years is and continues to be every single week he steps out behind an O-line which is atrocious, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, it's really heartbreaking to watch them play at the moment. You know, you really do feel so sorry for Jared Goff and Todd Gurley and, oh, poor Jalen Ramsey. It breaks your heart. It breaks your heart.
It really does, and the one thing a team with a bad O-line and a terrible quarterback and a broken running back needs is to trade the whole world, trade your whole chest of drawers for a cornerback who has one interception in three games.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah.
They have zero picks. The next time in the first round pick is 2022. Jared Goff is still going to be bad in 2022.
He'd probably be worse.
Yeah, and Todd Gurley will probably not be able to walk. Aaron Donald will probably be playing safety. Yeah, it was a bad week, good week for both sides of the coin with the LA Rams because, yeah.
Speaking of the Rams, a very good week for the Seattle Sounders, who scored as many points in their championship game as the Rams did in their Super Bowl, which is always worth pointing out.
I was so confused when you said, speaking of which, the Sounders.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, 3 points and 3 points, or $3 even. And that looked a great day for everyone in Seattle on Sunday evening.
Yeah, massive congrats. I mean, I think Macklemore said, of all people, it's now a dynasty, but the Seattle sports, 99% of Seattle sports is on a tear, aren't they? The Storm winning the WNBA. Obviously, the Huskies won a couple of Pac-12 and got to the playoffs, close to the playoffs a few years ago. The Seahawks, obviously, have we said, won 8 games for 70,000 years straight. At least 8 games and won half the games every year. 14 in the last 19 years. The Supersonics have gone, and we don't talk about that. Who else? The Reign are pretty good in soccer. The Storm, WNBA, you've got the Seawolves. No matter how ridiculous the name is, they've won 2 out of 2 Major League Rugby titles.
There's a team and called the Mist, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, they won the Lingerie Football League team, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of have to go and watch a game with that probably at some point, don't we? And then you've got the Seattle Mariners. But yeah, but apart from that, the Seattle sports is on a tear. But you said to me last night, it's pretty cool seeing the people we know and people we know, but you know a few of them more than I do, but people we know and follow and know in different arenas sampling a thing that me and you watch and follow and spend too much time agonizing over. It was cool watching them experience that in a big game over there, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. It was great for other people to experience the joys that you get out of certain things. And not jealous at all that they all go to one game and see a championship when I've been going for 25 years and seeing fuck all.
That's the most Adam Nathan response. It was all like sweetness and light, and you managed to turn it around.
Always.
And it sounds so, I just wanted to go to bed.
I just really want to go to bed now.
Yeah, so we'll be back next week previewing the Eagles game. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can on all usual means and methods: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Seahawks UK, and all of the rest of it. These Seattle Seahawks are 8-2, and it looks like January football is afoot, which is wild. But until next time, enjoy the week off and relax, and maybe just spend the evening with Scott Hansen, and no stress whatsoever. Also, Adam, no fluke or clue, are the number one seed in our league and absolutely hosed their opponents this week. One quick note on that.
No one cares about your fantasy teams, Stu, especially when they beat mine.
Yeah, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Thanks for all your questions and feedback, and go Hawks.
Looking back, can you say now in the rearview mirror how important this was to where you could have been had you not won, and now you win and the race is on the last?
Huh? You want me to go back and talk to you? You want to tell me what it felt like if we lost? I ain't going there. We won. I ain't talking like that. Yeah, ask another way. I'm not answering that question like that. Jeez, how miserable could we have been?